The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Coming up, we've got all the news and views from Manchester City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
A win on penalties in the Community Shield is a lovely way to start the season, and it makes a nice change after losing the last three Community Shields as well. However, it's now time to put another ghost to rest. In 12 of the last 13 years, the team that has won the curtain raiser has then not won the Premier League title. Although maybe the superstitious types among you can take confidence from the knowledge that the only team to break that sequence is indeed Manchester City. Bernardo Silva wasn't worried about that record when he interrupted a question about it after the game.
I've won the Premier League in the past with winning the Community Shield.
And the campaign to make that happen again starts on Sunday as City travel to Stamford Bridge. We'll preview that game later on in the show. We'll hear from Dan Childs from Son of Chelsea to find out what the hell is going on there. And we'll also catch up with the former City goalkeeper Nicky Weaver to talk about why he fondly remembers the last time City opened the season at Chelsea. I'm David Mooney, and joining me on today's Blue Moon Podcast, I've got two City fans. I've got Bob Toole.
Hello, mate. How are you?
Not too bad, thank you. And Kieran Murray's with us. Hi, Kieran.
Hello there, how you doing?
I am not too bad at all. Now then, you two, to start us off with, I was thinking, since Bernardo's vicious assault on Garnacho at the weekend, when he admitted this.
I was thinking that it was a foul for us and that he doesn't need to touch the ball. So if he touches the ball, I'm allowed to do something like that. I know that I'll get a yellow card, but the rules are the rules. I'm happy with my yellow card. If he's happy with his yellow card, that's fine as well.
Famously, if the ball's out of play, you can do anything to players. That is the rule. When have you two done anything that you knew you were going to get in trouble over, but you just did it anyway because you wanted to? Kieran, anything?
A few things, but I'm a bit concerned this is going to turn into a sort of therapy session where I bestow all my regrets and apologise for past misdemeanours on people.
Feel free.
Yeah. I mean, well, there were a few times we sort of like tried to get kicked out of clubs and the student union and stuff on purpose. I mean, this is going out on air, so my Auntie Josie was the head dinner lady in my primary school, and
I love this already.
And they used to keep Christmas dinner a secret, but they would tell us, you know, as our nephew. So she was like, please don't tell anybody. So I told a couple of mates, thinking like, you know, it's only two people, but I didn't realize that, you know, these rumours and gossip spread like wildfire. So the whole school basically knew it was Christmas dinner on the Wednesday or whatever. So they had record numbers of boys in the dinner hall, and it was all my fault. So when they didn't have enough food prepared and they didn't have enough space, and it was a whole disaster. Like, this weighs heavy on my conscience almost every day. For the past 30 years.
Yeah, I was going to say, you must have laid that ghost to rest at some point. It's a while ago.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, I was about seven.
Does your Auntie Josie know that you did this?
My Auntie Josie, so when I queued up to get my dinner, my Auntie Josie was waiting for me and gave me probably the biggest bollocking I've ever had in my whole entire life. So I just sat down at my Christmas dinner in tears.
Oh, excellent. Brutal, that is. Bob, beat that then.
Yeah, I'm not sure mine's quite as dramatic. But anyway, so mine is when I was doing my GCSEs. I think I was studying 10 GCSEs. So I kind of decided, because I was getting a bit stressed out, like with mum and dad, that I was basically going to sack off one subject. So that subject was French. So I decided that I was going to skive my French oral exam.
Oh, man.
But I did the most stupid thing ever, because normally if you skive, you sort of leave school, you go home, or you go to the park or whatever, do something completely different. But my French oral exam was on the last day of school, the last day of term, and they were like showing films in class and stuff. and they were showing films in my French classroom, and I went in there to sky my French oral exam. I was just looking back, like, what the hell was I doing? So yeah, I got caught, and I had to do it like a bit red faced.
Excellent.
But much like Bernardo said, he was happy with his yellow card. I'm happy with the E I got in French. So, there we go.
Excellent. Right. Well, let's talk about the football. People haven't come here for this. The penalty shootout. Then it's. I guess it's good to have won one for a first time in what feels like decades. Bob, happy to have a list of 7 players who successfully converted penalties.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there was a few in there that I thought they're definitely going to miss, like Diaz. I mean, yeah, that was a terrible penalty, but it just went in. And Nunes as well. Like, I was convinced he was going to miss. He just looked so nervous.
Yeah.
But yeah, like, I mean, just delighted to get that win, particularly against the opposition. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, happy with it.
Less said about Bernardo's penalty, the better, Kieran. It's twice he's done that for City now. But, I mean, there's some other good stories in there. Like, pleased for Akanji to score after missing in the Euros against England. As Bob says, Matthias Nunes pulled one out of the bag as well.
Yeah, it was... Because there's almost not that much jeopardy in... oh, my God, I've just said jeopardy before the season even started.
I know.
But there's almost not that much jeopardy in a Community Shield, Charity Shield game. But there was added jeopardy because it was against United and you just really, really wanted to win by this stage. And penalties, you know, in their very nature bring about it. So everybody who stepped up or everybody who started walking towards hitting the shot, it was just like, you know, he's not going to score, or Bernardo could rectify this, or Akanji could, you know, have some redemption after that miss. So, yeah, there was almost a little subplot under, you know, all the penalties in some way. Was just added a little bit more spice to it. And then, yeah, getting the win over the line was just was lovely. Didn't Bernardo score a couple in the Euros for Portugal?
Yeah, he saves his misses for City, which is, traditionally players miss for City, so it's fine.
Infuriating, yeah.
Bob, what did you make of the whole Onana versus Haaland thing? He goes, go on then, put it there. And Haaland goes, no, I'll put it the other side.
Yeah, it was pretty funny. I was, like, shitting it in the build up to him kicking it, because I was like, oh, it'd just be typical in this circumstance for him to fall for the trick. But yeah, it was quite funny. I loved how, like, Haaland just turned around afterwards, and he wasn't like goading him as such. It was just sort of laughing at him with pity, which I really, really enjoyed. Because yeah, like, he didn't do that to any other players, did he? No. He just tried picked on Haaland, and it's just like, if you're going to pick on anyone, don't pick on the guy that was just like a goal machine. It's just like a bit... yeah, I don't know. I was going to say something.
It's asking for trouble, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. Can you laugh with pity? Is that, can you laugh at somebody with pity?
He did. So, yeah.
All right. And Kieran, finally, Ederson. A really nice save from Jadon Sancho. And then, I mean, he's not particularly known for saving penalties, so it's nice for him to do that. And then rolled one in as well.
Yeah, brilliant. Just with all the sort of drama and beef and weirdness that's been going on with Ederson over the summer, about losing his position as number one or leaving the club and taking umbrage with something Sam Lee had said.
No. I think in fairness to Sam, something Sam Lee hadn't said, but right, people thought he had.
Right. Yeah. I sort of missed the ins and outs of that story. Did his wife get involved or something?
Yeah.
What the hell? Yeah, so it was just nice to sort of set up his season with heroics like that. It's great to see him score penalties always. You know, I was literally laughing, not with pity, but just laughing in general as he stepped up to take it. And then, yeah, a different method than we're used to seeing with him, where he sort of thwacks it. And it was... Yeah, a bit more of a, oh no, I've opened that can of worms.
No.
Yeah, so it was just a much nicer placed sort of traditional penalty. But yeah, happy for him. I wanted him to stay. I want him to stay as number one too. So yeah, hopefully that's a nice platform to build on. And yeah, long may it continue for Ederson. He's great.
Yeah, I'm still working on getting Susie Dent on the podcast to talk through what the difference between a thwack and a thump and a blast is. So we'll save that for later down the line. Before we move on from the penalties,
it's it's a quiz about the time City have won on penalties.
You didn't think you'd get away. Just because there was a quiz on last week's show doesn't mean that you're going to get away this week.
Oh, that's exactly what I thought.
Okay, Bob, I'm going to let you choose. Do you want to go first or second?
I'll go first.
Go first. Okay, 1 to 6. You've got a question behind each number. What are you having?
One.
Question number one. In what year did City last win a penalty shootout where all five of their takers converted from the spot?
Ooh. Was it 2019 when we beat Liverpool in the Community Shield?
That did happen in that game. Good memory on that one. But no, I'm afraid it was 2023 against Sevilla in the Super Cup.
Okay,
there you go. It was only last year. There you go. Okay, swing and a miss. Kieran, over to you. 2, 3, 4, 5, or 6?
3, please.
Number 3. Okay, who were the first team that City beat on penalties at the new Wembley?
I'm going to say Liverpool just because Bob set me up a bit.
It is Liverpool. It's a different game, though. It was the
laughing
league...
with pity.
Yeah. It was the League Cup final in 2016, not the Community Shield in 2019. But there you go. Wow. Yeah, beat Liverpool penalties after a 1-0 draw. Okay, 1-0. Over to you, Bob. What are you having? 2, 4, 5, or 6?
5, please.
Question number 5. Okay, how many penalties did Nicky Weaver save when City beat Gillingham at Wembley in May 1999?
Two.
He did save two. He saved from Paul Smith and Guy Butters. There you go. 1-1. Equaliser. Kieran, over to you.
4, please.
Number 4. Okay, on which ground did City beat the same team on penalties in the League Cup quarter-finals in both 2017 and 2018, with the two games coming 364 days apart?
Oh my word.
City not the same team out of the League Cup quarterfinals in 2017 and 2018. Both games on penalties. Where was it played?
I really can't remember. Molyneux.
No, it's King Power.
Oh, no, I have no recollection of that whatsoever. Yeah.
Drew with Leicester in the quarterfinals in both years, 1-1. Would it beat him on penalties both seasons?
Wasn't one of them Bravo?
One of them was Bravo, yeah, I think so.
Yeah, I remember that. Yeah.
There we go. Okay, so Bob, over to you. You've got 2 or 6 available?
6.
Number 6. Okay. In which country did City win both of their penalty shootouts in the 2008-09 UEFA Cup run under Mark Hughes?
I can't even remember who we played in that run at all, which is not great. Spain.
It was Denmark. They beat Midtjylland 4-2 on penalties, and then they beat Aalborg 4-3 on penalties in the knockout rounds.
I have no recollection of either of those things. Clearly.
There we go. Kieran, you have a chance to win it now.
Oh.
Question number 2. After a draw at the Etihad in the League Cup in 2017, who were the first team that Pep Guardiola's City beat on penalties?
Wolves.
It was Wolves.
Oh,
it was Wolves.
That was the game that I kind of was thinking about from a previous answer. I knew it was wrong, kind of, but Wolves were in my head.
Yeah, that's a shame because I had a really good tiebreak for this one.
I'll throw it out anyway for the bag.
Fine. Okay, how many different players have scored penalties in shootouts during Pep Guardiola's time at City?
115.
if only that were the case. So Bob, higher or lower than 115?
Lower, I think.
Lower. It was lower. It was 23. It was Aguero, Akanji, Alvarez, Cancelo, De Bruyne, Diaz, Edison, Foden, Grealish, Gundogan, Guardiola, Haaland, Jesus, Kovacic, Nemecha, Nunes, Sane, Savinho, Bernardo Silva, Sterling, Toure, Walker and Zinchenko. There we go.
Boom.
Full list for you there. Okay, Kieran, congratulations. You're the penalty shootout quiz winner.
Oh, thank you very much. I'm delighted. Thanks to my family, including my Auntie Josie. I'm sorry for what I did.
Email the show through our website, bluemoonpodcast.com.
Lovely stuff. Okay, so maybe there'll be a surprise quiz next week. Maybe three in a row is pushing it, but we'll find out next week. Before we get to that, though, let's talk more about the Community Shield. Bob, we kind of touched on Bernardo at the start of the show, but we not actually got into everything that surrounded him, because he had quite an interesting day with the equaliser and the challenge on Garnacho and then missing the penalty. All I can think of, like, biggest Bert in the squad?
Yeah, he's got to be up there, hasn't he? So I didn't see the game live, so I caught up with it after the event. And, like, the reaction to that challenge against Garnacho, loads of people kicking off saying it should have been a red card. I was like, I'm preparing myself for something horrendous here. And I watched it back, and it's like, he obviously touched him and he knew what he was doing, but, like, it's, like, never in any world is that a red card. So that was quite funny. Yeah, and just to get, like, the goal late on, a sneaky little header from a really short guy. And then miss a penalty in typical City fashion. And then, yeah, in his interview afterwards, obviously, honest about the foul and everything was really good.
Not enough honesty from footballers about things like that, is there?
No, I mean, most of them get up to it, don't they? And I think as well, like, just, yeah, leaving one on Garnacho as well, it's like kind of what every City fan would like to do, probably, because he's just such a horrendous person. Like, I mean, I don't know anything about him other than his football, but, like, yeah, the way he goes and sits on the hoardings and stuff like that, it's just like, you absolute wanker.
Yeah.
And he's just, like, painfully ugly as well. So, yeah, like, love it.
Yeah. Kieran, as Bob says, Bob said rather lyrically, a nice little header from a really short guy, something like that. Mm-hmm. It was quite a nice balance flow to it. It was nice for him to get on the score sheet on his birthday.
Yeah, he just it was a brilliant day for him. And the fact that he didn't come on until about the 70th, 80th minute or something as well. I think he just is having a bit of a brat summer, and he just epitomizes what it means to be a nasty sort of little devil. He's my favorite player. I just absolutely love him. He always brings energy. He always brings bite. And yeah, for him to come on, get the equalizer. Obviously he missed the penalty, but he was crucial in the win, really. And yeah, on his 30th birthday as well, so it's one he'll remember and one we'll remember too. And hopefully he just has a good season. He can be in and out, and sometimes his endeavours don't pay off into anything. So it would be nice this year if he just has a real. This could be his final season. You never know. it'd be nice. Yeah, again, just similar to Ederson, it'd be nice if he hits the ground running and replicates that throughout the rest of the season now.
Can I just ask you, Kieran, we're all millennials in our 30s. Why are we talking about brat summers?
Well, I wanted, hopefully, to impress your partner. And you can tell Sam that Charlie XCX has been mentioned on the show. I've been on Twitter every day. It's hard to avoid brat, so... Bernardo seems to sum it up for me. He's having a bird summer.
Yeah, a bird summer is more. That's more on brand for us. Let's talk about some of the younger players, because, Bob, your namesake, Oscar Bob, we celebrated him having such a good pre-season on last week's show. He did really well at Wembley, and then obviously we've heard the news that he's got a fracture that will keep him out at the start of the season. That's quite a blow for him, isn't it?
Yeah, it's really sad. Because, yeah, I thought he was good against United. I didn't watch the pre-season games, admittedly. But, yeah, it felt like there was a lot of momentum behind his performances. And I think he'd taken a lot of people by surprise, like, even last season as well. Like, I think there wasn't much furor around him coming into the team. But he's just such a tidy little player, isn't he? Like, he's just close control of the ball is exceptional. I saw a video on social media a few days ago of him, like, playing when he was about 9 years old, and he's just like, it's like there's watching him now, but obviously just smaller.
Are we sure he's 9 years old and not just really far away?
Could be. But the way, like, he jinks with the ball and stuff, it's exactly the same, like, that close control and just dribbles past people. So yeah, it's really It wasn't the injury as well. It's like he broke his leg, but it wasn't like a result of any like a bad tackle or something. Mm. He just did it on the turn or something, which is even more like, you know, unlucky in a way, I think, because he doesn't really have anyone to blame. Like, maybe that wouldn't help blaming anyone anyway. But
just having a vengeance against one of the members of the squad. Mm.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, it's really poor luck, isn't it? So, and he looked like he was going to have a pretty big role in the first few weeks whilst we've got a lot of people returning late from the summer. So, gutted for him.
Yeah, Kieran, there is the flip side of this where obviously I've seen a lot of people quite disappointed with what's happened, and it is hard luck for him. But at the same time, you know, he'll come back into the squad later on in the season. It doesn't look as if it's the worst sort of injury that he could have had in the world. There's plenty of other injuries that could have kept him out for longer. And at the same time, he will come back and be a part of the squad. He's not expected to end up playing a bit part when he comes back either.
Yeah, and hopefully Dr. Cugat in Barcelona can sort him out and do his magic.
Bit of gaffer tape, good as new.
Yeah. I think we've had a decent enough record for players who come back later in the season, you know, because De Bruyne has been injured for a lot of seasons, and then when he's come back and he's been... It's almost like it doesn't rule you out and your services will be required later on, so... Yeah, there's still optimism and still hope for Oscar Bob. In a weird way, it's nice that it's happened so early because he will still hope. I mean, we don't know the extent of the injury and we don't know how long he's going to be out, but fingers crossed he still has a good few months, certainly in the, you know, from winter into spring, where he can make a difference, and hopefully he'll be fired up and raring to go, because, you know, as we've talked about in pre-season, it was basically, it seemed to revolve around him and everybody was very excited. So, he'll just hopefully have to be patient and learn in the school of hard knocks that these kind of things happen. And, I kind of get what Bob's saying, because it would, you know, you'll go through, your mental health will take a battering now because you probably will blame yourself or, you know, because the nature of the bad luck of it. So hopefully that just fuels him for when he comes back.
Yeah. Just out of interest, does your Auntie Josie do any school dinners for the School of Hard Knocks? Or?
Well, I certainly learned in the School of Hard Knocks at Christmas.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall. No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Another player, Kieran, but Guardiola said that after the game that he told Cheeky that he didn't want to loan out James McAtee. Can you see why from pre-season and from the Community Shield game?
No. To be fair, I get excited when James McAtee comes on the ball because I just want to see him do something. And I think on Saturday there were flashes. He hit the post, didn't he, as well? So it was good to see him. It was good to see him more involved, but it's just one of those weird things, isn't it, with young players where sometimes you want to see a bit of magic from them instantly all the time, and I think Foden was a good example of that, because when he came in, it was instantaneously, oh, he's a player, whereas McAtee, you're sort of always waiting, and then I think he's almost trying too hard, and I don't think his personality kind of lends itself either. You know, he seems a bit quiet and unassuming. So yeah, you're just waiting for some sparks. But from what I understand about him at Sheffield United, he took a little while to settle in, and he took a little while to get going. And yeah, as I say, I mean, if Pep sees something, then there's something there. And as we talked about before, normally players, when they go out on loan, they're never seen again. And he's had two loan spells now, and he's still back in the squad. So there is something. But I'm just waiting for that fire to ignite with him, really. But yeah, no, he's a tidy looking little player, and it would have been nice for him to get on the score sheet if that had gone the other side of the post. So yeah, I mean, just we'll keep our eye on him, and maybe opportunities will present themselves now that the Bob's out or whatever, and some of the players are taking a while to get embedded back in after extended breaks in the summer. So yeah, one to watch, I think, but just nothing massively exciting me too much at the minute with him.
Yeah, and Bob, Nico O'Reilly had a lot in said about him in pre-season. He's a lot earlier in his development than any of the other players we've talked about. How do you think he did? Because it's kind of like throw him to the wolves in the Community Shield and just kind of see what happens. Making your debut in the first team against United at Wembley.
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to take too much away from it because those circumstances are pretty unusual for a debut. I know it's some people don't consider it to be a competitive fixture. It's kind of a halfway house, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a semi debut, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And like against United, it's just the stakes are. What's the phrase?
Stakes are higher.
Yes, thank you. went a bit brain dead then. So it's difficult really to judge him on that. I mean, I thought he looked quite tidy at times, and he was trying to take a few risks, which I guess is good. But yeah, like I don't really expect to see him much again this season. I think he's probably had more minutes, hasn't he, by default because of like the Euros and Copa America and all that, delaying people's returns. So we've kind of needed to field him out of necessity to field a team at all. Yeah. So it's way too early though to call a judgment. I mean, if we get a little run in the League Cup, it'd be nice if he plays in that a bit, but beyond that, I don't really see where he's going to fit in the coming months.
Yeah. How about Rico Lewis, where he fits in? Because, I mean, he isn't a youngster anymore, but it was once again another great performance. But you've got the issue there of the fact that, I mean, Kyle Walker's the senior fullback, and, you know, Guardiola played him a lot last season. Can you see Lewis getting more minutes at fullback, or do you think he'll end up kind of playing a bit further forward?
Probably a bit of both. I mean, he's proven, hasn't he? I think that he's like a class act, and he's quite versatile as well, like playing in the sort of doing that inverted fullback thing and sort of dropping into midfield. I mean, you've got to phase Walker out at some point, and he didn't have an amazing season last year. So I do wonder how much of it is his role in the team is because he's the captain. That must have an effect on how many minutes he gets. But yeah, Lewis is like amazing. Like he probably doesn't get as many minutes as he should, and possibly because he's like really small, and he's like could get pushed around quite a lot. But he's so like good on the ball though, isn't he? And quite incisive with his passing. So he definitely deserves a chance. Like, but we've seen it in years gone by with Foden, where like everyone was desperate for him to get more minutes, and it was quite a slow burner. And in the fullness of time, it was the right thing to do with him. So perhaps that's going to be the case with Lewis as well.
Yeah. Well, we'll discuss who of those might be involved for City at Stamford Bridge shortly. But first, we need to find out more about what on earth is happening at Stamford Bridge. A brand new manager, a troubled performance against City in pre-season, and some more transfers in. So how will it all look? Dan Burke has been speaking to Chelsea fan Dan Childs from Son of Chelsea to try and get some answers.
I think that the general response and mine was quite underwhelming. I think, obviously, the shockwaves of Pochettino leaving. Not that Pochettino leaving was out of the ordinary or something that you couldn't have anticipated at all. It was just given the way the season ended. I think most of us thought the sensible approach was to stick with Poch and try and progress. But yeah, I mean, Maresca is a massive risk. I know obviously to City fans, obviously, you know, him being part of the coaching staff, him working in the academy. But, you know, in terms of his management in a senior first team level, there isn't a lot to go off. And the jump from Championship to Premier League scrutiny is massive, especially at a club like Chelsea. Pre-season has been a bit of a mess. And this is the thing. I think that Maresca is probably in a quite an unwinnable situation or quite a difficult one, because a lot of the frustration and ire from Chelsea fans is actually not directed at him. It's directed at the people above him. So trying to work around that whilst you're trying to implement a system that looks awkward and dodgy is kind of hard, because there's already a lot of reticence and kind of inbuilt cynicism from Chelsea fans. So the kind of the sloppiness and the chaos of pre-season really hasn't helped that. So I think you're hard pressed to find a lot of Chelsea fans who walk into the season feeling that A, Maresca will be here for the long term, and B, just that the club generally is going in a great direction. So it's been a challenge for him, but of course that can all quickly change if results, when the serious stuff begins, become a little bit more positive for him.
Yeah, we've all seen the graphics going around of showing how big Chelsea's squad is at the moment. What is it, 8 goalkeepers on the books or something like that at the moment?
Yeah, I mean, I'm it's kind of my job in a way to keep up to date with what Chelsea are doing. And I have to say, it's difficult. It's difficult to even, in a 24 to 48 hour cycle, grasp who we've signed, who we've let go, the ripple effects of the next big decision. You know, that's kind of unfortunately the case at the moment. So yeah, it's I think a lot of Chelsea fans are as confused, despite supporting the club and knowing the club inside and out, as much as everyone else in football, to be honest.
I was going to say, do you feel like there's a clear plan in place?
No, but I, you know, it's not that there's no thinking behind what's going on. I just think that the mindset behind it is something that irritates and concerns a lot of fans, you know, in terms of this idea that, and they're kind of using PSR as a bit of a shield. You know, it's quite clear that they want to acquire as many young players from across the world as possible. It feels like they're using academy prospects from Cobham, some of whom have already proven themselves capable of being some of our best performers in the first team, kind of at the altar of this project. I think part of it is also maybe trying to make up for mistakes they've already made and wanting to kind of, at times it feels like, be the smartest in the room and pursue an idea and a vision just doesn't seem to fit or gel with what Chelsea has been or kind of what the game and the reality of the highest level is as well. So of course we can sit here and go, there's no plan. And at times it feels like there's no plan, but I just think that it's a very misguided plan that seems to be getting Chelsea into more problems than solutions, unfortunately.
Yeah, how do Chelsea fans feel about Todd Boehly and his ownership of the club at this point? He's obviously quite a divisive figure in football. Is he divisive among the Chelsea fan base as well?
Well, I think that there's, unfortunately, and I can understand from a wider football perspective why his name is still the most prevalent. But to be honest, you know, Todd Boehly isn't really running things in the way I think people think he is. He is kind of been shifted to the side or stepped back a bit from the ultimate power players at Chelsea. And, you know, if you speak to Chelsea fans, those who I think probably maybe pay more attention than others, is that Paul Winstanley, Lawrence Stewart, the two sporting directors, and Benedict Barley, who is very much from the Clearlake side, because Clearlake have more of a share and ownership of Chelsea than Todd Boehly. So those three have kind of been the power players at Chelsea for a long period of time now, kind of since, I mean, the Todd Boehly sporting director interim window that everyone remembers, where he became kind of the face of this new ownership, that is a long time ago at this point. You know, that the power players at Chelsea are now Igbali, particularly the Clearlake side, and Winstanley and Stewart. So obviously you'll hear Boehly's name, but I just think the general feeling around the ownership, this blue co, because of course it involves Strasbourg and multi-clubs and, you know, kind of their broader strategy is one that irritates a lot of fans. Anecdotally, I think I'm very hard pressed to find Chelsea fans currently who, of course, different levels of spectrum, but nearly all of them are at the very least concerned about and don't have full trust and belief that the ownership group are taking the club in a great direction.
Yeah. So of the summer signings you have made this year, which would you say you're most excited about? Who might make the biggest impact, and who do you think we might see in the starting lineup on Sunday?
I think, funny enough, I think it's the most recent, if I've forgotten anyone since, Pedro Neto. I like Neto, and yeah, sure, there is a massive red flag about him in terms of his injury record. And listen, Chelsea, in some ways, he fits right at home with Chelsea because we have so many injury prone players. But I just think as a Premier League level player, someone who I've watched firsthand against Chelsea cause so much havoc. And maybe as well, if you want to fit it into what Maresca likes to do with his wide players, he likes really wide players and feeding them, getting them 1v1 against their opposing fullback. And from a creative point of view too, I mean, Neto really became a hub for that for Wolves when he was there. So I'm excited to see him. Mark Guiu, I think, is maybe an outside shout of someone who could develop over the course of the season. He only was signed for about 6 million, which in the current market and the way Chelsea spend is obviously freakishly low, but he's actually impressed. Other than that, I can't say there's any other deals that really stand out, because a lot of them are punts for the future. A lot of them are names that have gone back out on loan to other clubs, or a lot of them are names that just don't really stand out as exceptional or level raisers, you know, as probably you'd want in a transfer window. So like Kiernan Dewsbury, who I don't think is a substantially better footballer than Conor Gallagher. Mm. And it's moves like that, and Tosin Adebayo, I don't think, is a substantially better footballer than Trevor Chalobah. So it's like moves like that I think people look at in the transfer market and they think, sure, okay, maybe under this coach it could work, but like, are we actually upgrading what we have? Is it a lateral move or is it a downgrade? And I think that's the big concern.
What's the feeling around the club actually about these academy players being moved out? You mentioned Gallagher and Chalobah there.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. I think from an objective kind of quality of player and looking at who was the best last year, Chalobah ended the season as Chelsea's best centre back. That's not a new trend. He's kind of proven people wrong so many times. Gallagher was one of the most important players for Pochettino. I think he ended with the most minutes or close to it last year. It's not just selling them off with and then replacing them maybe with worse players is a problem. It's also, of course, that emotional thing of feeling like the sense of connection is being ripped out. But also the way they've been treated by the club, I think, has been despicable, to be honest. Chalobah was not taken on the pre-season tour, and then basically not allowed now to train with the first team, basically being barred from first team facilities until he leaves. It's the same with Conor Gallagher. You know, these are two players who are very well liked among Chelsea fans at Stamford Bridge. And on top of that, I just don't think it's a very good look for the club. They haven't come out and denied these things. Very well-sourced people have, you know, confirmed that this is the situation. And I think you could probably see, because it slightly ties into the Man City Julian Alvarez deal, of course, in the past week with Atletico, how much of a mess that Gallagher situation is. So the treatment, what it says about kind of the thought process and the kind of the humanity of it too. I mean, every football club sells players. Man City sell their academy players pretty regularly as well. But the treatment of them, like if last summer Cole Palmer was completely, you know, excommunicated and thrown out the dressing room and not allowed to train with the first team, I can't believe City fans, I mean, I don't want to speak for City fans, but I can't believe City fans or most football fans would be happy with that situation. You accept that players leave your club. It happens every single summer. But the way they go about kind of making these players feel like outcasts when they've done absolutely nothing other than play pretty well for Chelsea on the pitch makes the situation really bizarre and quite infuriating for fans.
Yeah, that brings me nicely into my next question, because I was going to ask you about Palmer, actually. When he left City for Chelsea last summer, I think a lot of City fans were quite surprised at how much Chelsea paid for him. And I think, you know, it's probably fair to say everybody was quite surprised at the impact he had at Chelsea last season. He was incredible, obviously. He became the main man, and he's been rewarded for that this week with an improved contract. Is he Chelsea's most important player now? Are you expecting him to just come on leaps and bounds again in the new season?
Yeah, I mean, he was, it's interesting. I went to the Inter Milan game last Sunday, which was the first at Stamford Bridge this season. And when Palmer's name was even mentioned, he didn't start the game. He came on at half time. I mean, it was like a rock star had walked out. I mean, me and my better half, we went to the Taylor Swift Eras Tour, and that was pretty loud. And it was like a pop star walked out. And, you know, for such a young player, it kind of reflects how massive Cole Palmer is for Chelsea Football Club at the moment. One of the most staggering pieces of business. And I give this ownership a lot of criticism, but for 42 million in the current market to find a player with Palmer's impact, influence, his output, even at times in terms of goals in the Premier League rivaling Erling Haaland, is just insane for his first year. So yeah, he is the shining light. He really is for Chelsea at the moment. And of course, watching him come off the bench in the Euros final when England had very little hope and scoring, actually, from a Chelsea fan perspective, was almost a double celebration. So it kind of just shows you how wonderful a talent he is. I think the big concern is just under a new head coach who maybe wants to play a little bit more rigid style, something similar to Pep. I think that one of the things that was great about Palmer last year was the freedom he was given under Pochettino, and whether that will still be there. And if he's not given as much freedom, can he still reach the heights? But still, I think that Palmer is extraordinary talent. So hopefully he can go from strength to strength. I don't expect the same level of season. I'd be absolutely astonished, because then hopefully others will step up, like Christopher Nkunku, for instance, or maybe if he stays fit, Pedro Neto, maybe could contribute something. But Palmer, I still think, will be one of the huge players, defining players for whether Chelsea is successful or not this season.
Yeah. You mentioned earlier that Chelsea obviously finished last season really strongly, finishing the top six in the end. What do you think success looks like for Chelsea in the coming season? What are you expecting?
Expecting is probably not the right word. My expectations are a little bit lower than probably what the club need to be doing this year, and that is qualifying for the Champions League. I think it's just a financial kind of incentive, and it's clear Chelsea need to start qualifying for Europe given how much they've spent, or, you know, that FFP PSR bill is, and that thing they keep on running away from is going to become relevant sooner rather than later. They can't keep spending at the rate they have without some form of European or kind of big European football, which of course is the Champions League. So I think qualifying for that, getting back into that competition, is huge for the club, not just in terms of like sporting and getting the players to that level, but it's also, of course, commercially very important. But then on top of that, I think the Europa Conference League, and I've seen people kind of sneer at this, like no Chelsea fan is seriously saying that the Europa Conference League is the Champions League, and if you win it, it's the greatest night in Chelsea's history. But it is an opportunity to win some silverware. It's an opportunity, especially in the early stages, to use the bulk of this huge, ridiculous squad to its capacity, and to maybe blood some youngsters in that competition. And hopefully from Maresca, if he's here the whole season, it gives them a chance to win silverware. And also, it would very likely, unless Chelsea do something freakish that we don't see coming, give them their first piece of silverware, this ownership, which they desperately need. Of course, it's not the height, it's not the peak, but it would in some way be a start. So I'd say those two things. And obviously, I always think with like the Carabao Cup and the FA Cup, I mean, you are kind of at the mercy of draws. Chelsea were a little bit fortunate last year that they got a lot of more favourable draws. I think the season before that, we got Man City away in both of the first rounds we were in. Yeah, I'd say those two. I mean, I think Chelsea will finish around fifth or sixth is where I'm predicting them at the moment. Whether fifth gets you Champions League this year because of coefficient, obviously that's kind of out of Chelsea's hands. So yeah, that's where I'm putting Chelsea. There's no denying that Chelsea have quality players. I think everyone, even the most harsh Chelsea fan or harsh critic of the club outside, will see there's clear talent there. Cole Palmer, Christopher Nkunku, Nicholas Jackson had a really good season, Enzo Fernandez on his day, Moises Caicedo, Romeo Lavia, Malo Gusto, Reece James, Levi Colwell. There are really good players, and players who, as I said, could flourish and blossom into something really good. And maybe it's just the simple football economics of having a lot of good players in your squad. Sooner rather than later, it's going to work out for you. But because of the instability around the club, I think that's why a lot of fans are not maybe going into it with the same ambition or kind of hope they would have following the end of last season, when things did look like they were finally heading in a good direction, because there's been so much upheaval behind the scenes at the club over this summer.
Yeah, looking at this game at the weekend now then, so I think it's fair to say that Maresca is kind of cut from the same cloth tactically as Guardiola. Are you expecting Chelsea to kind of mirror City this weekend? How do you think they'll set up based on what you've seen in pre-season?
Yeah, I mean, it's very early stages for Maresca, and obviously I'm sure you like me watch the friendly in America, right? And Chelsea were massively punished playing out from the back. I mean, City, like Celtic, pressed Chelsea very high. And when teams have pressed Chelsea very high this summer, they've got a lot of gifts from it, basically. And, you know, Maresca, it's kind of one of those early things. I mean, I guess in some ways you can relate it to like the Erik ten Hag situation a couple of years ago at Man United, right? During his first preseason, it's all about this nice progressive football. And then Man United lose the first two games of the season, and he's under massive pressure, and he has to adapt. It's whether Maresca has that within him to adapt. And of course, there are different theories of whether you should be adapting or not, but there is just a reality, and I think a limitation to some of the players Chelsea have got in their starting 11 that concerns me, that Chelsea can't really afford to have a really bad start to this season. We haven't got time in this podcast because it's not a Chelsea podcast, but there's a mood inside Stamford Bridge that could turn very nasty very quickly because of the ownership, because of the things we've already discussed. So for Maresca, I can't see him adapting, but obviously that comes with massive risk because this team is still learning to play in what he deems, you know, a very important and kind of detailed system. So Pep Guardiola, of course, is going to know all those weaknesses, no matter what he says in the press about how much he likes Maresca. There he will still play, and I think the City players will do too. So there is massive risk for Chelsea walking into Sunday's game.
Well, we have a charity bet on the Blue Moon podcast. Let's finish with a score prediction from you, please.
I can't, even though I'm a bit negative, I can never predict a Chelsea loss. I'm going to go for a wild 2-2 draw. I think there's going to be some really chaotic moments, but my only hope is, I think playing City early in the season is always a good thing. I'll of course be stupidly proven wrong following this game. but I always think City, you don't want to be playing City in that sweet spot of Christmas to April, because that's when City really start going. There's always a few dodgy days, isn't there, with City at the start of the year, where people think, is it going to be a year where they wobble? So maybe, just maybe, Chelsea catch them on an off day, and maybe that kind of new season energy, you know, proves the cynicism wrong from myself and others, and Chelsea can do something great. But I still think we are just weak defensively and maybe a little bit too wasteful in front of goals. So I think it'll be exciting game, 2-2, and won't be the worst start to the season for Chelsea.
You're listening to the Blue Moon podcast. You've made it this far, so don't give up now.
That was Dan Burke speaking to Dan Childs. Time to look ahead to that game from a City point of view now. Kieran, in terms of those youngsters and who we've just been talking about, given the squad was back late and it's been a bit of a bare bones start to the season, do you see many of them kind of thrown into this one, or do you see a more senior team that's unfit? Well, what will Guardiola go for, experience or fitness?
Experience, probably more than likely, just given the fact that it's away from home on the first day and it's against, you know, one of the bigger clubs. I think he'll have a point to prove, wanting to beat, you know, his former protege, who's in charge of Chelsea now. And I don't think we took any points off Chelsea. Or no, we didn't beat Chelsea last year, did we?
Yeah, two draws, but they beat him in the cup.
Oh yeah. So it would be nice. It would be nice to hit the ground running this season with a win. So I think he'll go all out experience as much as he possibly can, you know, because his hands are pretty tied with the nature of when players come back and fitness levels and things. So yeah, I would like to see a full strength team, obviously. But what does a full strength team look like when? You know, when Rodri's just back and the English players are just back and Ball's been injured, etc. It's going to be an interesting one. It's really hard to call, sort of lineup wise. And Pep said famously in the summer that we're going to be late, and usually we are.
They'll probably get fined for that again, won't they?
Very good. It's an interesting one. I like when we play a big hitter early on, because it gives you much more of a measure of where we're at. And you know, playing United and beating United as well was a good way into it. So it'll be nice to see. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, Chelsea are a really weird one to read, aren't they, Bob? They've signed 40 players since Todd Bowley took ownership of the club in June 2022. City have signed 38 since Guardiola took over as head coach in 2016. So like, how do you plan for a game where there's all sorts of possibilities and a new manager and all this going in? Is it very much a case of Guardiola just going, well, I don't really know what we're going to get, so let's just play to our strengths?
I think it's got to be, hasn't it? I mean, I doubt Chelsea even know what they're going to do, so it would be unreasonable to expect anyone else to know. I kind of agree with Kieran that it'll go with like experience regardless of fitness. The only exception, I think, would be like Kovacic instead of Rodri. I don't know, I'm not quite sure why I've come to that conclusion, but I think like Foden will play and stuff. But yeah, like... I mean, Chelsea, they've got like, what, 7 goalkeepers?
Eight, I think, at the latest count.
Oh, yeah. 8? Oh, right, okay. So I don't know whether it's possible, but they should like just field all 8 of them and then a couple of strikers and see how they get on. But yeah, like, it's just mind-boggling. Like, why are these players going there? Like, I thought it was quite interesting as well. Like, you know how they're trying to do that deal for that Atletico player? In exchange for like Gallagher.
Yeah.
But he turned down Chelsea, didn't he? And I thought, well, thank fuck somebody's turning them down, because why would you want to go there? Like, I mean, they've got about like 9 left wingers or something as well. It's just like, you've just, how can you possibly know you're actually going to get a decent chance? So it's not, it's refreshing to see somebody like, actually, no, I'm all right, thanks. I mean, I'm reading between the lines. He may not have said that.
Yeah, I was going to say. Are you anxious at all about this game at the weekend? Because as Kieran said, you know, Guardiola says that City will start the season kind of slowly, and as in those words, they'll be late. It's almost a case of like it. I don't want to say it doesn't matter the result, but it doesn't really matter the result. They've got a long time in the season to catch up any points that they drop. And it's just about kind of getting the performances back to where they need to be for later on in the year.
Yeah, I think I'm not overly anxious because given the state Chelsea seem to be in, I mean, they didn't have a good pre-season as far as results and performances concerned. And we like beat them pretty comfortably as well in that, which was reassuring. So I'd rather play them now than any other time in the season, because one would assume they'd only get more organised as the months wear on. And as for us, like playing like a more traditionally better team early on, I think will help focus the minds a bit. Because if we went to someone that's like a bit like crap first game of the season away, when we've not really sure what we're going to play ourselves, like which players and stuff, and they're, we're not really sure what fitness levels they're at, they may like be a bit complacent. But I think, yeah, being against a team who we've had a bit of needle with over the years, I think will be a good thing. So yeah, I'm not really anxious about it, but I agree, like if we don't get a result, it's like it's not the end of the world at all. So yeah, we've got plenty of time to turn it around.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
Everything from clothing to household items are getting more expensive each day. The world of fast fashion has complicated clothing production by shipping cheap parts around the world to whoever can sew them the cheapest. And now you, the consumer, are paying the price with rising costs. American Giant is about keeping things simple and close to home. They aren't affected by tariffs because their products never leave the U.S. Skip the tariff and snag yourself American-made clothing with American Giant. Get 20% off your first order when you use promo code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com. That's 20% off when you use code STAPLE20 at American-Giant.com.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Kieran, obviously we talked about the shape of the squad a bit earlier on. We talked about McAtee and kind of how he could come in. I guess that one of the positions where he could end up filling in is that, you know, Foden's late back, Grealish has been injured. It's really, I guess the injury thing for Grealish is one of the most frustrating things of the last few weeks.
Yeah, it's similar to the Oscar Bob thing, isn't it? Really, he had a great preseason. He had something to prove. He missed out on the Euros. So if anybody was fired up for the season to begin, I think it would have been Jack Grealish. And he needs a good season. I mean, there's no point hiding away from that. Everybody knows it, and he knows it. So to start off with an injury, hopefully, I think it's just niggles, isn't it, as they say. So hopefully he is not too long. But, yeah, he could have been useful for this game. Because I think Chelsea are going to be running about like headless chickens a little bit. So, you know, having somebody who can steady the ship and keep the ball and hold on and set
the tempo, I guess.
Set the tempo, yeah. So it would have been really nice for Jack to be there. But hopefully a chance for McAtee or maybe some of the younger players. It's really, really difficult. And I mean, it's difficult to get into Pep's head and predict the lineup. You know, at any time of the season, but certainly first game with a skeleton squad, with a couple of injuries, against a really, really unknown quantity in Chelsea. So yeah, it's hard to know. I don't know.
Yeah. Why was the skeleton footballer sad?
Because he had nobody to go with.
Yeah, he had nobody to play with. Yeah. Sorry. You said out skeleton squad. It just made me think of that.
What I give the punchline to a wrong joke.
What joke were you thinking of?
Like why did the skeleton not go to the ball or something?
Yeah, because he had nobody to go with. So why was the skeleton footballer sad? He had nobody to play with.
Yes, that's what I mean. I gave the wrong punchline.
I mean, it did the job. It did the job. Bob, an opportunity for Doku maybe though, if Grealish isn't there. He did well in the Community Shield.
Yeah, I mean, it's him and Grealish that sort of fight for that left wing. So yeah, I'd be happy to see him play as well. He's pretty lively, isn't he? So, and he's proved at times last season how dangerous he is. So I'd be more than happy with that. I mean, it's a shame about Grealish, obviously, but his time will come, I'm sure. So yeah.
How about Savinho though? It's obviously he's only had fleeting moments in the squad so far. I think Guardiola described it as glimpses we've seen from him, which I guess it kind of sums it up quite nicely.
I don't think he'll start. It depends what he does in central midfield, but I think I wouldn't be surprised if he puts Bernardo on the right wing and does Foden, De Bruyne and Kovacic in the middle.
Hmm.
So I think he could come on, but I'd be pretty surprised if he starts. It wouldn't surprise me if he starts the week after against Ipswich, but I think he'll... I mean, they're saying big things about him, aren't they? And they've like got every belief in him, which is great, but yeah, I think it seems like they're going to bed him in, I think. So here's for him to start and score a hat-trick.
Yeah. Kieran, are you excited by what you've seen from him so far?
Yeah, I thought I liked the look of him on Saturday. He looks like a tidy player. I thought he was involved in lots of the good things that we saw from City. And I don't, to be honest, I don't know much about him from his Girona days, and I wasn't really following his career or his progress. But yeah, it's nice to have a new signing, and it's he should be a good addition to the squad. I was quite impressed, and I think he could chip in and help out this season. Yeah, it's just always nice to have an exciting, tricky little winger, and. Yeah, he should push us on. It'll be nice to see.
Yeah. Well, we'll come to the charity bet shortly. But first, the last time City started the season at Chelsea, they ended up playing out one of the worst seasons in the club's history. There are no worries about that happening this time, but we're going to take a moment to look back at that game. That's because it was the first time that goalkeeper Nicky Weaver started for City in the league for over 4 years, after a string of knee injuries that almost ended his career. City lost 3-0 that day, but I've been hearing how he remembers that game rather fondly.
Well, it was an interesting one because, like I said, I'd been injured and I'd not started a game for a long time. We just signed Joe Hart that summer. David James was still at the club in pre-season, and then we signed Andreas Isaacson as well. So at one bit, I'm not really sure where I sat in the pecking order. Then, you know, David James went to Portsmouth. Joe Hart was only 18, to be fair to him at the time. And so, yeah, it was between me and Andreas Isaacson. But, you know, I think he was going to play, Andreas. And then the day before, we played on the Sunday at Stamford Bridge. On the day before, we picked up a little ankle injury. And Stuart Pearce turned around to me and said, "You're playing tomorrow." So, yeah, very very excited. Also quite nervous, not played, started a game for a long time. Chelsea were the champions. And, a mixture of both excitement and, a little bit nervous as well before the game.
Yeah, so you had about 24 hours to kind of get ready and get in the mental space for it. How was that after all those years of struggling with injury?
Yeah, I mean, listen, I played a few games in pre-season, so I fell up to speed. And it was just obviously a big occasion going to Stamford Bridge. They were champions. And yeah, but at the end of the day, that's what we did. You know, we were paid to play football and, I was looking forward to it. But yeah, it was a... I think if you've been out with a long injury for that amount of time, then it would obviously you'd be a little bit rusty. But to be fair, the season before, I'd had I'd had a loan spell at Sheffield Wednesday. So I played 14 games in the Championship sort of over Christmas time the season before. So those games there really helped me. And yeah, you know, I actually felt I did okay in the game. We lost 3-0, and I think Usman Darbo got sent off on his debut. So yeah, it was always going to be a really tough game, and I think we sort of did all right. The sending off didn't help us, but ultimately we lost 3-0.
Yeah, it's one of them games where I guess you mentioned Chelsea being the reigning champions. I mean, City at the time, they weren't the beast that they are now, and you know, they tried to refresh the squad with what little transfer funds they had. So is the fact that your first game back is away at the champions, does that play on your mind at all? Does it add any pressure?
It almost takes the pressure off in a funny way, because no one gives you a chance to get anything anyway. So anything you do get would be a bonus. I suppose if we're playing against a sort of mediocre Premiership team at home, then there'd be probably more pressure on that game to get a result. So, but what it does do, when you lose your first game 3-0, you've got to bounce back with a couple of good results after, because you don't want it to be the, you know, start of something bad happening. But yeah, I think after the game we were obviously disappointed with the result, but there was positives there as well. I mean, I think the scorers were Lampard, Drogba and Iron Robin that day. So, you know, they were formidable opponents, you know, anyway. So it was, yeah. So listen, it wasn't a great start to the season, but by no means a sort of disaster, if you like, going to Chelsea with 10 men and getting beat 3-0. There's no real shame in that.
Yeah, it's a weird one for yourself as well, I guess, because ultimately, like, you've lost the game 3-0, but how are you feeling personally after the game?
Sort of selfishly, I was sort of buzzing in the dressing room. I didn't obviously show it externally, but you know, I'd not played for a long, long time, and a lot of people, myself included, doubted that I ever would play at that level again. So it was a personal achievement for myself. I was pleased how the game went. I don't think I could have done anything with any of the goals, and you know, I think I had a pretty, you know, an okay sort of game and a nice game to sort of ease me back in, if you like, if you can get eased back in at Stamford Bridge. But so, yeah, so personally, I was absolutely, you know, it was like a real personal milestone to get back in the team, to play in the Premier League. So deep down, I was sort of really pleased and proud of myself for that. But obviously, you know, the result wasn't what we wanted. But so, yeah, so selfishly, I was sort of bursting inside sort of with pride, if you like, to get back and play at that level.
Yeah, so I mean, in terms of kind of the games going forward, you mentioned about, you know, having a bad start. It was a 0-0 with Portsmouth, and then a win over Arsenal at Eastlands that came next. And you stayed in the team for these games. So this was not a case of, you know, you come in while Isaacson's injured, and then, you know, you go straight back out again. You were keeping your place by this stage. That must have felt good.
Yeah, it did, because, you know, Andreas, he picked up this injury, but it wasn't a serious injury. So from memory, I think he was only out for a week or two, a couple of weeks. But obviously, we lost at Chelsea. Then we played in the midweek against Portsmouth, which is the infamous Ben Thatcher tackle. But we drew 0-0. So again, I had an off decent game, kept a clean sheet. And then, you know, the big result came for us on the Saturday when we played Arsenal and we won 1-0. And, you know, that was it ended up being from a really poor start of the opening day against Chelsea. After three games, you know, playing Arsenal and Chelsea in those games as well, to come out with 4 points was a good start. And obviously the 1-0 win over Arsenal give the whole club, you know, a real boost. And I remember it was a great atmosphere, and yeah, it was a well-earned 1-0 win.
Yeah. How, I mean, people will remember you going off injured against Birmingham in 2002. This is obviously 2006 by this stage. In those 4 years, how close did you come to your career being over and just not being able to recover from those injuries?
Well, I mean, I don't think I could have really got any closer to sort of retiring. I mean, I had two surgeries in England. They didn't work. Then I went over to the States. I had another three surgeries over in the States. The last one I had over there was a big meniscal transplant, so basically taking a cartilage from a dead person and inserting it into my knee. So I was the first British footballer to have that surgery at the time, so it was sort of groundbreaking stuff. Unfortunately, you know, I got back and sort of played for another 10 years. So, but I think, you know, to be fair, I did every time of that operation, I did get back to just about full fitness, and I'd be training, and then like my knee would flare up again. So, you know, there were times where you know, I was back for training for a sustained period of time, and then my knee just sort of couldn't handle it, and then I'd be back to square one, if you like. But yeah, so I mean, it got to the point where, you know, as a footballer, you insure yourself. I was having to inform my insurers of my progress because it looked at one bit like we might have to make a claim. But thankfully, you know, the surgery worked and I did everything I possibly could to get myself back to fitness. And yeah, it's, you know, when I look back at my career, that's, and it's more of a personal thing because people don't see what you've been through, but that's probably, the you know, my biggest achievement is getting back to full fitness and playing for as long as I did after the injuries that I had.
Yeah, I was gonna finish on that, actually. I was going to ask if you know, people will want to talk to you all the time about Wembley in 99 and kind of the promotions under Joe Royle. But I wondered how much that 2006-07 season, you kind of how proud you felt to play a part in that for City.
Yeah, I think I played 31 games that season. And, you know, from where I was to get back and play that many games, it was something, I class it as my biggest achievement in football. But like I said, it's more of a personal thing because no one, there's only myself, knows what sort of journey I went on. And there were some dark times in there, you know, when you've got the physios and doctors telling you they don't know what's wrong with your knee and they don't know if anything can be done for it. You know, you do start to have doubts. And at the time, I was sort of, you know, 23, 24, so I was only young. But yeah, ultimately, I came out the other side, and that was a really successful season for me, although ultimately it wasn't for the club, and, you know, Stuart Pearce lost his job at the end of that season. But I'll always be grateful for Stuart for, you know, sticking with me that year, because to be fair, he could have put me in for the first few games, and then when Andreas got fit, he could have put him in quite easily, but he didn't. He stuck with me. So yeah, so, you know, I look back on that season with great fondness, although I don't think too many other people will.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. But don't worry, it'll be over soon.
That was Nicky Weaver speaking to me about the opening day in 2006. So the charity bet time. One game, one win on the charity bet this season. That last-minute Bernardo Silva equaliser against United meant that my one-all prediction was spot on. So we've raised £80 after one episode this season. Time to see if we can't make it two from two. William Hill is giving us three £10 correct score singles on City's games. The winnings are going to the Man City Fans Food Bank Support Group, and it's the small matter of Chelsea away on Sunday. We've already heard from Dan Childs. He's gone for a two-all draw. That is 12-1 and £120 if he's right. Kieran, what are you having for this one?
2-0 to City. I think 2-0 seems to be a regular score for opening day in recent memory. Is that right, or have I completely made that up?
I can think Brighton. I can think Arsenal.
Was it 2-0 against West Ham last year, or in the Hallam's first season?
Yeah, it was. 2-0, yeah, so. Yeah, good idea, though.
Yeah, thanks.
Yeah, looking at previous patterns. 12-1 and £120 also, if you're right. Bob, what are you having?
I'm going to go for 3-1 to City. It is a score that happens in football sometimes.
So. It does, you're right, yeah. You are right. 3-1 is definitely happening. In fact, 3-1 is the score that wins the most on the charity bet as well, most often. But something weird's happened, because that's also 12-1 and £120 if you're right, which just says to me that nobody's got the foggiest what's going to happen on Sunday. You've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more information on responsible gambling, take a look at begambleaware.org. Now, I bet you thought or hoped we'd forgotten about this.
It's the listeners' questions. It's the listeners' questions. Don't be giving us lots of flannel or suggesting it's Ask the Panel, because it's not called that. All right. It's called It's the Listener's Questions. Make it thoughtful or inventive. Try to provide an answer incentive. It's the Listener's Questions. Thank you.
No, thank you, Higgy. Peter got in touch to say, do not get rid of the listeners' questions jingle. Don't worry, Peter, we've not. I'm actually working to try and get Higgy to do some more of them. So we'll see what we can do throughout the season. But if you want to get in touch with your questions at Blue Moon Podcast on Twitter, you can email as well through the website. Go to bluemoonpodcast.com and fill in the form there. We are going to start with John on the emails, who says, where do you think City will finish this year, and who do you expect to have a good season in the team? Kieran, who do you reckon is going to have a good year?
John Stones, I reckon Grealish, once he gets going, might have a good season. Bernardo, as I said earlier. I hadn't really thought about this. So you've kind of put me on the spot a little bit there, John. But hopefully Haaland gets back to his first season best as well. That would be nice to see.
Yeah. Bob, how about yourself?
Yeah, I think Haaland, I've got a sneaking suspicion, is just going to be like lethal and not miss loads of sitters again. Which is weird to say in it because he still scored loads of goals last season.
I know.
But yeah, I think Foden will be good. Yeah, I think Grealish will, once he's fit, if he stays fit, like without loads of niggles on and off, which he seemed to have last season. Who else is there?
How about where City will finish? Because that was the other part of John's question. It was basically, I guess he's getting at, do you think City will win the league this season?
This is ridiculous because I've not to say, but I've not really thought about it. Like, I've just like enjoyed having a break from the football. And it feels ridiculous as well to say because I kind of feel like we probably will win the title, but that would be them five in a row, which is just crazy to say. And I feel like I'm really blasé saying that.
I know what you mean, because if I was any more laid back about this season, you could pour me into a bowl. You know, like, yeah. It's just like, there's no, there feels like there's nothing to worry about right now.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's part of it, isn't it? Like, cause we've kind of, as a club, achieved all there is to achieve to a certain extent, like aside from winning, like, you know, Champions Leagues multiple times or whatever. But that's just like a luxury, really. So as a fan, like, it's like, yeah, like there's no real reason to be stressed. And our closest rival, I think, would be Arsenal. But so far in the transfer window, they've not done anything that's making me think they're going to be any better than last time. And Arteta's like still being weird and with his team building stuff. And it's clearly not worked to date. So why is it going to work now? I think we probably will win it. But that's not me saying we are going to or being really cocky about it. I struggle to see where the real threat comes from.
Yeah. Kieran, how about yourself?
Basically, I just would echo what Bob said. I'm not anxious about this season at all. It's just really nice to not feel too... I mean, I'm sure by kind of March, April, when things are at stake and the old Jeopardy's creeping in again. But at the moment, it's just... We've achieved so much. It's been absolutely unbelievable. This is probably Pep's last season, so I'm just going to kind of roll with the punches and enjoy it. We've not done anything mega in the transfer window, so the squad's fairly thin, which is the way he tends to like it. But that also leaves us open to, you know, if there are injuries.
Well, I was I've kind of edited John's question down a bit there, because he did also ask, do you think City need to go into the market now that Oscar Bob's picked up this injury? So like, in the final weeks of the window, do you think they'll do that?
For some reason, the way that I've been, you know, picking up kind of stuff that Sam's been saying on Let Me Talk and that, it does feel as if we're not finished all of a sudden. And, you know, late transfers in the window, like, as Akanji's proved, can turn out all right. It's just, normally it would worry me. And, you know, normally that kind of excitement of seeing who we're signing, who we're linked with and who we buy and thinking about how they're going to integrate into the team and what they'll bring us. Like, you know, we don't have any of that at the minute. And so, I mean, it would be nice to go into the window, to go into the market before the window closes. But if not, I mean, we will just get on with it. Trust Pep, trust the process, trust the players. Hopefully we'll be all right. And because we have achieved so much, and because it's almost like ridiculous to think we could win five in a row, four in a row was an unbelievable achievement and unbelievable to even be in that conversation, never mind achieve it. If somebody else has to win it, then, you know, so be it, as long as it's not United, or Liverpool, probably. I don't care enough about Arsenal, really. And it's funny kind of watching them do weird things, like, you know, Arteta has a habit of, or bottling it, So yeah, it's almost funnier watching other teams fall away than it is. The enjoyment comes from that more than more than what City do, because City just are so well run, so solid, so well managed and coached. They just sort of get their head down and they've got tunnel vision. Get on with it, yeah. And the other teams around us just fall away, and it's very funny.
Yeah. Well, hopefully the same thing will happen again this season. Jody says on the emails, welcome back, everyone. Hoping for a good season again and five in a row. One question I have, semi-automated offside isn't going to come in until a few months into the season. Could this affect the fairness of the league? With the current system, a goal could be given because of the tolerance level in the way we draw the lines. But in the new system, that same goal might be disallowed. How is that fair to do halfway into the season? Bob, does this VAR is something that has divided fans, and you look at the amount of time that offsides have taken in recent seasons. The semi-automated offside at the Euros was pretty good and pretty quick. Should they just do it from should they not just be doing it from August rather than or if they can't get it in place for August, leave it till next season?
Yeah, it's got to be one or the other. It does make it unfair, definitely, because I mean, last season you had like Howard Webb going on radio shows and in the media generally, like having to explain away multiple times really bad refereeing decisions. So this will just make it even harder for themselves. Yeah, it just calls into question the integrity of all the fairness of it. Like, it will probably be better in the long run, but why is it at a point now where one of the richest, well, the richest league in the world, is having to implement something new halfway through a season? Like, it's just so badly organised. I really don't understand it. But yeah, like, I'm sure like Liverpool will come off worse from it, because they always do with these things. So yeah, it is what it is.
Yeah, Kieran, I can't get my head around kind of like the pros and cons of this on the basis that let's say for instance City score a goal this weekend that is allowed because of the tolerance level that would have been disallowed after the semi-automated offside is introduced, like. City benefit from that now, but then after the introduction of the technology, they don't benefit from it next time. But that's the same for everybody else as well. So it just balances out like that.
Yeah, it's a funny one, isn't it? I mean, we talked about this recently, where City just seemed to like the rule changes in the Champions League. Like we missed out against Liverpool because VAR wasn't implemented, and then the following season we missed out against Spurs because VAR was implemented. So it's just like when these rule changes happen somehow City always sort of like fall foul of them. But yeah, I mean, there are of course pros and cons. Pros being you get to see a funny little cartoon version of the players
is that the biggest pro
for me, yes, especially when you know when their arse is offside or they're kept onside by the player's knee or something, and then you can just see like the kneecap drawn on the cartoon. it's mental, isn't it? Like
you just want to look at players' arses through the dividing line of the offside. Is that what you want?
yes that's the biggest pro. And yeah, so if it happens and City don't win the league because of it, then whoever does win, it's a tainted title because the rules changed halfway through the season. But if City do win, yeah, it's all fair in love and war.
Excellent. Right. Well, we'll see how it goes later on in the season. But for now, that's the end of this week's Blue Moon podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks also to my guests for this one, Kieran Murray.
Thank you very much.
And Bob Tull.
Cheers, Mooney. Thanks for having me.
Bob is back on this week's Nostalgia Show, available now for Patreon backers. It was the top 10 opening days of the season, and we've got a clip for that coming up shortly. But if you want to listen in full, head over to patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast to sign up. Bob, it was good fun, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I enjoy doing those kind of nostalgia shows. So, get involved.
Yeah, go and have a look. Patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. I forgot to mention on the last show, too, we've now got a merch shop set up. We've really worked hard on the designs of all the products in there to make sure that they fit the vibe of what we really want from the podcast. So if you'd like an exclusive City t-shirt, hoodie or mug or print, including several Wembley 99 designs, then check out our Twitter pinned tweets. Just go over to @Blue Moon Podcast and have a look. I'll be back after the game
game with Chelsea, looking ahead to the match with Ipswich. See you there.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
I watched this in the Red Lion in Withington, and I, at the time, I wrote a little City blog, and I reread what I wrote about it because I remember writing about it. And I watched it in 3D in the Red Lion. I had like those dodgy little cardboard glasses you get. It's like I had no memory of doing that, so I'm glad I reread that this morning.
Why were pubs doing that? Christ.
It speaks to the times, I guess, doesn't it? Like 2011. I mean, maybe it was a thing then. I don't know, but I think it's the only time I've ever watched a game in 3D.
I know, when you get to the ground, it's in 3D as well.
Well, yeah, that is true. I think it gave me a bit of a headache, to be honest. So maybe that's why I didn't continue.
Was Aguero's debut any better in 3D?
Well, I don't know what it was like in 2D. I don't know.
Good point. This is the game I was thinking of, by the way, for Thwack.
Definitely. Watching the highlights again this morning, I definitely think it's a thwack. But in my blog I wrote about it, I described it as a thunderbolt. So maybe I was wrong all those years ago calling it a thunderbolt.
Yeah.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast. And join us again next time for another episode.
The Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall is turning up the heat this summer. Buy now with no down payment and no payments for 120 days.
That means no payments until fall.
No payments until fall.
With over 8,000 cars, trucks, and SUVs available, there's something for every budget and lifestyle. Pick your ride, get approved, and drive home today with nothing due until autumn.
But hurry, these offers won't last forever.
Visit Jeff Weiler Columbus Auto Mall and take advantage while selection is strong.
There's a lot of pressure to wear the right clothes for every situation. But the clothes don't make the man. With Mack Weldon, you can build a wardrobe that looks polished in any setting and tells the world you stay you wherever you go. Go to MackWeldon.com and get 25% off your first order of $125 or more with promo code MACK25. That's MACKWELDON.com. Promo code MACK25.